So, Rabbi Sai, this is a little bit of an introduction to the fifth perek of Masechta Pesachim, which you'll find on Daf Nun Ches Amud Aleph. So my goal for this morning would be to give a little bit of an introduction to some of the tools that you might want to take advantage of. And I've said on many occasions that to learn Kodshim, you need to go step by step. And in the past, we have tried to study Kodshim from Masechta Zvachim, and Blineder, we hope to get back to Masechta Zvachim again. But nevertheless, there's a certain challenge in jumping into the cold water with Zvachim. Pesachim and Yuma, those two Masechtas, are much better candidates for gradually moving into the world of Kodshim. And this perek in particular, Tamid Nishchat, which deals with, amongst other things, the Shnei Tmidim, the Tamid Shel Shachar, and the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim, both which are brought daily, including on Shabbos, is a very sort of easy landing into Kodshim. The tools that I'd like you to get a hold of, if you can, and we'll see in terms of the possibilities of how to get this, you know, with sharing screens and all that stuff, but the two tools that I want to call to your attention, which I think are very helpful, one is the Pirush HaMishnayos LaRambam. I'll just show it to you what it looks like on the outside. And this is called the Mishnah in Pirush Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon. And this was published many, many years ago by the Moser Rav Kook. It's three volumes. And we need the volume that is Sefer Kodshim. So you'll see it'll say Kodshim and Taros. It's the third of the three volume set of the Pirush HaMishnayos. And it has the translation of Rav Kapach, Zichron Levroch. So he was the expert on the Rambam's Arabic, or what we call Judeo-Arabic, and there's no one in his category. No one. The original translation of the Mishnayos is full of mistakes. So this is the translation that you want to get. In any event, the first Masechta in Kodshim is Zvachim, and the introduction of the Rambam to Perek Rishon, the first Perek of Zvachim, offers a very fine introduction to Kodshim. We'll read at least one or two paragraphs this morning just to get a feel of what the Rambam is trying to do here in his introduction. So that's one tool that I wanted to call to your attention. And although there's very little in the Rambam's introduction that is specifically honed in on Korban Pesach, per se, but nevertheless, it does have the advantage of giving you a general introduction to Kodshim. The second introduction that I want to call to your attention is here in the Masifta. And the introduction of the Masifta is much more honed in on the laws of Korban Pesach. So in a sense, that introduction will be more helpful to us learning the issues of Korban Pesach. And Korban Pesach, by the way, takes this part of Pesachim almost all the way to the end of Pesachim. Almost half of the Masechta, in the yeshivas they call it Pesach Sheni, is dedicated to the Korban Pesach. And on the one hand, Korban Pesach is very much has membership in the group called Kodshim. But on the other hand, it is very unique in many, many different dinim. Many, many different dinim. One of the main issues we'll have to address is whether or not Korban Pesach is a Korban Shlomim, or is it a Korban Shlomim, but it's a different kind of Korban Shlomim. Now, the last parak of Masechta Pesachim, Arvei Pesachim, that goes back to Pesachim as a holiday, as a regel, and has very little to do with Kodshim, although the end of the Masechta already switches back to Kodshim in the Mishnah called Ein Maftir Nachar Pesach Afikoman. And that again reflects on one of the unique dimensions of Korban Pesach in the world of Kodshim, and that is Nechal al Asova. And we have to understand and analyze whether other Kodshim also have that din of Nechal al Asova. Now the Rambam opens up his introduction by telling us that the reason he feels compelled to write this introduction, which he doesn't always do, is because he says that there are many Bnei Torah that even though they try to delve into the Torah in a very profound way to try to really understand the Torah, when it comes to Kodshim, however, he says very often these same individuals have almost no understanding of Kodshim. And he says that part of the reason for that is because Kodshim is not something that we see in reality. In other words, we don't experience Kodshim hands-on. And he says that, therefore, I feel compelled, Askel Lepirush Seder Zer, I want to be Mefarish, the Seder Kodshim of the sixth Dorim, with this very detailed introduction. Vahaviani Lekach, what brings me to do so? He says, Afalp, even though I have to admit that many of the details that I'm going to present here in this introduction, Mikros Batorah, I'm just really just summarizing what you'll see in Torah Shebichsav, in Sefer Vayikra. But he says that Kfar Ovad Bavonosenu Sherabu, he says that the understanding of these issues in our sins, he says, is Ein Ma'ainim Bo Ki Im Ma'atim Ibnei Adam. There's only a very limited population of people in our Bnei Torah world that study Be'iyun Kodshim. And Ein Inyan of Nizkarim. And they're not reminded of what they learned. It's very easy to forget what you learned. Lefisha Adam, Lefnesha Adam Yaskiram, who's going to remind them of the laws that they learned when they don't see that in reality, in the world as we live in it? The Ein Maisa Hagorem Chazarosa. There's nothing happening in Kodshim that causes you to remember what you learned and to review what you learned. So, for example, yesterday on Shabbos, somebody asked me about about dishwashers. You know, can you use it for milchiks, for fleishiks? So I said to him, I have to review the halachas. But at least there's a question being asked that motivates me to want to review the halachas. You know, not bar nat and not bar nat be'etera, and give him an intelligent answer. But in the case of Kodshim, you know, who's going to remember, you know, whether you need Malika Bechatas Ha'of on this side of the Mizbeach or on the other side of the Mizbeach? Nobody's asking me these questions, so I'm not really in the mode of reviewing them. And therefore, we got to the situation, listen to how the Rambam describes the reality. He says, Acha hushmu bahem ha-chacham ha-gadol va-sachal shebahamon. Sachal shebahamon is a reference to ignorant people, and he says to some extent, even the Chacham Gadol, he says, knows as much about Kodshim as the Sechel Shebahamon. I mean, that's a pretty radical statement. The Rova Talmidim Einam Yodim in Akarbonos Afilu Mashenemru Bo B'Mikros Merubim. You know, this is like the opposite of Masechta Shabbos. Masechta Shabbos is 60 pages long, and it all interprets one single pasuk in the Chumash called Melech Lotasa. Whereas Kodshim in Torah Shebichsav is so detailed, almost an entire Chumash is there to outline the specifics of Kodshim, and nevertheless, he says, Rova Talmidim don't even know what's in the Chumash. You know, you read through the Pesukim and you barely understand them. You know, you hear the Kriyas HaTorah, and to say that you review them and understand the details and apply them, forget it. I mean, there are very few on the face of the earth who really know that. So therefore, the Rambam writes that I'm compelled to write this introduction. So let's go through at least the first part of this introduction, in which the Rambam divides up Karbanos into two basic categories, and then he subcategorizes one of those two categories. He says the first distinction is between Karbanos of Balei Chaim as opposed to what we call Ofos. So he says in Balei Chaim we really have 4 plus 1. What does that mean, 4 plus 1? We have kvasim, we have bakar, we have izim, and then we have categories of birds, which come under yonim and torim. So the Rambam has already told us that in terms of animal karbanos, as opposed to menachos, we have 5 different categories of animals. 3 of them are animals, and 2 of them are birds. But then, he says that within this general category of karbanos that are brought from living creatures, we have 4 subcategories. And this is the most important thing that we have to learn as an introduction to Kodshim. Sugei HaKarbanos Arba, Ola, Chatos, Asham, and Shlomim. Now, keep in mind, when the Rambam gets to Shlomim, he adds the word Domehem, as if to say, etc., that Shlomim includes also HaBachar, HaMaser, VaPesach. So that Bachar, Maser, and Pesach are sort of, what word can I use, expansions or branches of a more general kind of a category called Shlomim. So you have Stam Shlomim, and then you have specific additional Shlomim, which are not similar, or shall we say, not exactly the same as general Shlomim, but they nevertheless come under the category of Shlomim. That's why the Rambam adds the word Vidomeha. I'm just curious to see if Rav Kapach noticed this. I'm just curious. Number 4. He goes into more of a study of the etymology here. Oh, Vidomeyam. He does write it. Bechor Pesach Umaser. That's at the end of footnote number 7. So if you get a hold of Rav Kapach's translation of the Rambam, you'll see that the word Domeyam here in the Rambam refers to Bechor, Pesach, and Maaseh. Now the Rambam tells us what is unique about each of these 4 categories. Number 1, the Ola category. The Rambam says, "He nikteres kula." It's completely burnt on the Mizbeach. And he says, it doesn't matter what kind of Ola you're talking about. So again, we spoke about Balei Chaim as the generic tower. Then we broke it up into 4 subcategories, the first of which was Ola. Now we're dividing each one of the 4 categories into 2 categories, which is called Karban Yochid or Karban Tzibur. And the Rambam points out that what's unique about an Ola is that it's completely burnt on the Mizbeach, and that applies both to an Olas Yochid and an Olas Tzibur. Now, Olas Tzibur is going to be the first subject of our study today, which is called the Karban Tomid of Shachar Bein Arbaim. These are Karbanos Tzibur. They're not individual obligations, but rather they fall on the community. However, we should keep in mind that the common example of a Karban Ola is actually a Karban Yochid. And perhaps more than any of the other 3 categories of karbanos, which some of which do have a karban yochid, but many of them do not, Ola is very, very often a karban yachid. I come along and I am misnadev, which means I take an edava and I take upon myself to bring a carbon ola. And we'll, as we go along, we'll try to figure out what motivates a person to want to voluntarily bring a carbon ola. Now, as far as the animals from which we take a carbon ola, basically we have all five categories. The only difference is that when we get to the categories of animals, we have to distinguish again between zachar and nekeva. In the case of a carbon ola, it's zichrei hakvasim. So when you're talking about sheep, you're talking about male sheep. And then we get to the other four categories of creatures, of Bali Chaim. We have Bokar, Izim, Yonim, and Torim. In those categories, the Rambam says there's no difference between a Zachar and a Keva. It's all inclusive. But with regard to Kvasim, we'll have to keep this in mind. The Kvasim for an Ola have to be Zachar. They can't be a Keva. Now the Rambam moves on to the second category of karbonos, and that's a karbon chatos. And he says that with regard to chatos, we have the following distinction. Hachatos, he says, shnei chalokim. It can be broken down into two segments. Okay? Yesh mehem, one segment is makrivim mimena Ha'imurim v'yochlu zichrei kahuna hashar be'azara. So this category of a karbon chatos, which is a little bit more, shall we say, classic, and that is divided into two parts. One part is burnt on the mizbeach. That's called imurim. Again, a word that we'll have to get used to. And the other part is eaten, but as opposed to shlomim, which we'll see is category number four, in the case of a chata, again, when you're talking about an ola, it's completely burnt on the mizbeach. There's no achila whatsoever. But when you're talking about a chatos, then the chatos is nechal, but only lezichrei kuhuna. So the kohanim are going to eat the chatos, and the bailim do not eat from a chatos. No way, no how. And this is the principle called Kohanim Ochlim Ubailim Miskaprim. The Kohanim will eat the Chatos, and through the Achil of the Kohanim, the Bailim achieve Kapara. And all this Achil has to take place as the Ram in the Azorah, which is again another part of Kodshim, which takes up a major chunk of Kodshim, is to divide up the Migdash into its various parts. And you'll have the Heichal, and you'll have the Bein Ulam Mizbeach, and you'll have the Azorah, and then you'll have the Arabayis, and the Lishkos, and so forth. So, I mean, that, you know, for that you have to learn major chunks of Masechta Zvachim, and all of Masechta Tamid. But be that as it may, what we have here is category number one. Yesh mehem, now he gets to the second category of chatos. Shashar nisrof. Kemoshen is buyer. It means that not only are the emurim burnt on the mizbeach, but even the balance of the carbon, what's left besides the emurim, likewise has to be burnt on the mizbeach. These are very unique cases of a chatos. In the footnote here of Rav Kapach, he doesn't give you too much of an insight here. He says that this might have to do with kodshim that became nosar. So we'll have to leave that out for the time being. Now, once again, like we saw in the case of an ola, chatos can be brought from all five categories of Bali Chayim. However, in the case of chatos, as opposed to ola, we're not limited to what we call zichrei kvasim. And here, tehei min hazchorim u min hanekevos, you can bring the karbonos of achatos, both from the males and the females, straight across the board. Then we get to the third karbon, and that's the osham. And there, once again, we divide up the karbon itself into two parts. The emurim are burnt on the mizbeach. The balance of the karbon is eaten by zichrei kahuna in the azara. But here again, although it sounds like osham is so similar to achatos, and fundamentally osham is similar to achatos, but here's where it breaks away from achatos in one detail, and that is lo yehei el mizichrei kvasim vilvat. In this sense, there's some overlap between osham and ola, insofar as, just like we saw in an ola, the kvasim have to be male kvasim, so too in the case of an osham, the kvasim have to be male. But he says, mehem en agdol, mehem en aktanim, v'ein karbonos atzibur osham, v'ein ola karbon yochid li'ola. So he points out here, the Rambam, that there are gedolim and ketanim. I don't know what the Rambam means by that. It seems like he's introducing a whole new variable into his discussion here. I wish he would have been a little bit more outspoken about it. But maybe he's referring to the age of the keves. I'm not sure. But he seems to assume that out of the five categories of Bali Chaim, an osham can be brought only from one of those five, and that's the kvasim, and only from the kvasim zacharit. And finally, and this will complete our introduction for today, and now we start Talmid Mishkat, we get to Shlomim. Shlomim, only the Eburim are burnt on the Mizbeach. And in that sense, a carbon Shlomim is very, very unique. It's almost the exact opposite of a carbon Ola. Whereas in a carbon Ola, we maxed out on Haktorah Gabi Mizbeach. In the case of Shlomim, we really minimize the Haktorah Mizbeach and only applies to the Emurim. What happens with the rest of the animal, the rest of the carbon? He says the following. If it's a carbon Yochid, now we have to keep in mind that 99% of Shlomim are a carbon Yochid. Very rarely do we have what's called Shalmei Tzibur. Maybe on Chag HaShavuos. And in any event, notli mehem kohanim chazev eshok, the kohanim get what's called matnas kahuna, and we'll see, as far as Bechor is concerned, as far as Maisa Behema, what's the matnas kahuna, but in a regular classic shlomim, the matnas kahuna is called chazev eshok. These are specific parts of the animal that have to be given to the kohen. Which Kohen? And that's a matter of the choice of the Bailim. He's in the driver's seat. He can choose which Kohen he wants to give it to. And these are two out of the 24 Matnas Kahuna. And what about the balance of the Karbon? I mean, there's very little that's given onto the Mizbeach as a Murin. Another little part that's given to the Kohenim. The rest is Yochlu Ba'aleim Hashar. The balance of the karbon is eaten by the bala karbon. This is the first time we're seeing this. In the ola case, there's nobody eating the karbon. In the cases of chatos and shlomim osham, only zichrei kahuna are eating those parts of the karbon that they're allowed to eat. In the case of the shlomim, it's the bala karbon who's eating the karbon shlomim, and that's good news for those of us who are not kohen. Because we seem to be excluded from eating from karbonos, but we're not. Shlomim is our invitation to eat from karbonos, but we have to eat it b'chol Yerushalayim. Right, until now we were speaking about zichrei kahuna in the cases of chatos and osham. They have to eat the karbon in the azara. Nobody leaves the azara. In fact, if the karbon leaves the azara, we'll see that that's called a psul yotze, and the basa becomes pasul. Whereas in Shlomim, the eating of the karbon encompasses the entire Yerushalayim. Maybe not Har Nof, because I don't know if Har Nof is part of Yerushalayim as far as Achilas Kodshim is concerned, but certainly all the areas that are included in the walls of Yerushalayim. Kavanosi, The Omri Baaleim Shachilasa Muteres L'chol Yisrael Gvarim V'Nashim. So first of all, the Baalim of the Karmon that eat the Karmon, in the case of Shlom, could either be male or female, men or women. And that's all Karmon Yochid. Now the Rambam talks about those rare cases of Shalmei Tzibur. V'mhayu Karmon Tzibur Yochlu Akonim Hashar. Once again, Shalmei Tzibur now fit back into the generic category of Kodshim, because we're talking about Shalmei Tzibur, and therefore it is only Zichrei Kohuna that could eat the Karmon, I mean, except for the Murim that are burnt on the Mizbeach, and not only that, the Zichrei Kohuna could only eat the Basar of Shalmei Tzibur in the Azara. Very similar to the other Karbanos. So that Shalmei Tzibur is a sugya unto itself. Where do we really subcategorize Shalmei Tzibur? Are they shlomim? They are shlomim in a certain sense because most of the basar is eaten. But on the and there are other dinim of shlomim that apply to Shalmei Tzibur. But fundamentally, they are very similar to chatos and osham, in the sense that that part that's eaten of the carbon is not eaten by the bailim. There are no bailim, or maybe everyone's a bailim, but no one gets to eat it except for Zichrei Kohuna, and only in the Azara. So Shalmei Tzibur, as I said, belong to a whole new category. Another thing that's unique about Shlomim is Lo Yehei Min HaOf Klal Klom Min HaTorim Vayonim. In other words, out of the five categories of Balei Chayim, only three can be candidates for Shlom. And that's going to be Bakar, what we say it was, Bakar Izen Vitzon. El Ein Makrivim Shlomim Ki Im Miyeser Shloshes Aminim. Not myth from the Oaf. So you'll never have Shalmei Oaf. We have Olas Oaf. We have Chatas Oaf. We have Hashama Oaf. But we don't have Shalmei Oaf. And again, he uses that phrase, Migdoleam umiktaneam. We'll have to come back to that. I owe you that. And then he says, Mizchaream unikovoseam. Verkach kol karbonas atzibur loye el mishloshes aminim lominatorim vehayon. And then he says a generic statement about all the karbonas, all four categories of karbon, that in a case of a karbon tzibur, we're only going to bring the karbon from three out of five of the categories of the Balei Chayim, and not from the birds. Okay then? So keep in mind that a karbon tzibur is not for the birds. Okay. So now let's start Perek Tamid Nishchat. And again, from this Perek, which is number 6, all the way to the 9th, that's 6, 7, 8, and 9, there are four prakim in Mesechta Pesachim that are dedicated to the Karbon Pesach, which is brought on the 14th of Nisan. It has to be roasted, and the basar of the Korban Pesach is eaten, as you know, on the night of the 15th, Machlokas Tanoim, whether you can eat it throughout the night or only, as Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds, up to Chatzos, up till midnight. We're going to deal with the following issues. Number one, Zman Shchitas HaKorban, and that's going to be up front here. Number two, we're going to deal with what's called Lishma in Shechita, whether Lishma has to be L'shem Pesach, has to be L'shem Bailim, or both. And then we're going to talk about a unique lav that applies to Shechitas HaPesach, in a case where one of the Bnei Achabura, the group that is bringing a common Korban Pesach, has chametz in his possession. And that's a lav of Lo Sochal al chametz dam zivchi. And we'll have to raise the question whether or not every single member of that Chabura is going to violate the lav if only one member of the Chabura actually owns chametz. And then we're going to talk about what's called the Seder HaPesach, the Shechita, followed by the Zrikas Adam. And then we have something called Hafshata, which means that they skin off the hides, the or, And finally, the Haktaras Imurim. And then we have the Achilas Basar Pesach. And the Torah commands us in a separate mitzvah, V'ochlus HaPesach B'Laila Hazeh. And that means that the mitzvah of Achilas HaPesach is at night. Ben, did you want to say something?
Yeah, hi. First of all, it's a pleasure seeing you, a pleasure learning with you. I've missed it. Thank you. Welcome, everybody. It's great being here. I looked over the Mishnah a little bit. Do we also do a Korban Chagiga on Erev Pesach like any other Erev Chag?
Yeah. Yeah, but
and how does that fit in? It's an
That's a whole different topic. We're going to try to see how we fit in what's called the Korban Tamid Shelbein Arbayim together with the Korban Pesach. Normally, as we'll soon see, the Korban Tamid is brought as the last Korban of the day before we close shop. And the only exception to that rule is Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach is the only Korban that is actually brought after the Tamid Shelbein Arbayim. And the question is, why is that so? Another point that we have to focus our attention on is that when we talk about the Tamid Shelbein Arbayim, we have to analyze and define Bein Harbayim. When is Bein Harbayim? And this is the one part of Kodshim that really is relevant to us today, even without the Beis HaMikdash, in terms of what's called Zman Tfilas Mincha. Because the earliest time for Mincha coincides with the earliest time for the Korban Bein Harbayim, the Tamid Shel Bein Harbayim. And we're going to discuss when is the earliest time for the Tamid Shel Bein Harbayim. Because after that time passes, then we enter into the Tamid, we enter into the time for Shchitas HaPesach. So the time for Shchitas HaPesach, in a pure abstract world, would begin the very moment that we conclude the Zman of Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim. Once the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim is brought, or at least the Zman is roy to bring the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim, then we're ready to go full steam ahead with the Shchitas HaPesach. So it's very important here that we, in order to figure out the Zman Shchitas HaPesach, when is the Zman Shchitas HaTomid, meaning Tomid Shel Bein Arbayim. And that's not a simple issue. You know, you and I might have said, well, Bein Arbayim is later in the afternoon. We're going to split the afternoon, which is made up of 6 hours, into two parts. You may have said that Bein Arbayim would be immediately after Shacharis, which means at noon. You may want to add another half hour, and that would take you 6.5 hours into the day, halfway through the seventh hour, because of either the language of the Torah, Bein Harbayim, or perhaps you have to wait until the shadow, when the sun is at its zenith, will tip towards the west and begin its process of setting in the west, and that takes a half hour, until we could see the shade from a kosel that's standing erect. So again, there are many, many different nuances and possibilities as to when is the time for Shchitas Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim. But whatever it is, the bottom line is that's the time for Shchitas HaPesach. And as I said before, that makes Shchitas HaPesach very unique, because normally we want to bring any carbon before we bring the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim, so that the last carbon brought on any given day in the Beis HaMikdash is the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim. And by the way, that applies even to carbon Musaf. You know, a lot of people make the mistake that since Musaf is a later carbon, we could bring it after the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim. Another point that we should mention, just by way of introduction, is that there's something called nedarim nenedavos. Those are voluntary karbonos. Usually it's a karbon ola, because a karbon chatos or a karbon oshem is eno ba benedava. You cannot, you know, volunteer a karbon chatos or a karbon oshem. There are very specific situations and scenarios in which you become chayiv in those karbonos. But nevertheless, it was quite common for a person to come forward with an adava of a carbon ola. And in that case, the Beis HaMikdash became a very busy place. Which might mean the following, that although you can shech the carbon tamid shel bein arbayim lamazogin at 12 noon, or a half hour later, very often we would have to delay the Karban Tamid to facilitate the Karbanos of Nidavos. Because if there is an exceptional volume of Nidarim and Nidavos, then we might not be able to get them all in under the gun, meaning under the Tamid. And we have to make sure the Tamid is going to be the final closure of the Avodas HaMikdash. So the possibility exists that in favor of encouraging Karban Nidarva, Neder Nidava, we'll have to talk about the difference between the two, but that's not relevant to us. We may have to, in effect, delay the Hakrava of the Karban Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim. And the question is, how do we juggle all this? What do I mean by juggle? To the same extent that you have to worry on the one hand about the volume of Nidarim and Nidavis, you also have to worry about the volume of Karbanei Pesach, Karbanos Pesach. There was a tremendous volume of Karban Pesach. The Mishnah later on speaks about the legs of the Kohanim that were knee-deep in dam, from all the Karbanos HaPesach that were brought on the 14th of Nisan. So that we have an end zone, the latest time for the Karban Pesach is going to be with Shkia, with nightfall. So we have to make sure that we have enough ample time for all the Karbanos of Pesach in the afternoon of the 14th. But at the same time, we want to have time for the Karbanos and the Nedarim and Nedavos that are normally brought on any day of the year, which might mean that we want to postpone the Karban Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim. Now, it's very nice on 364 days out of the year to postpone the Karban Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim in order to facilitate all these Nedarim and Nedavos Karban. But there's one day out of the year which is not a good idea, and that's the 14th of Nisan. Because in the 14th of Nisan, if because of the volume of the Avodah and the Karbanos, you're going to have to push off the Karban Pesach, you're getting dangerously close to the end zone of the Karban Pesach. And that we certainly don't want to do. Now, all this discussion about Nedarim and Nedavos is only relevant to 6 days out of seven. On Shabbos, there is no Nedarim and Nedavos. We don't bring any Nedarim and Nedavos on Shabbos. So in a case where the 14th of Nisan will coincide with Shabbos, we have more of a reason to begin the process of the Shechita of the Karban Pesach at an earlier stage, at an earlier time. Why? Because we're not pressured to allow for Nedarim and Nedavos. There are no Nedarim and Nedavos. It's Shabbos. Very interesting. You and I would have thought that maybe on Shabbos we can be more relaxed about it and laid back. Let's start the process of Shechitas HaPesach a little bit later. But for two reasons, we don't want to do that. When the 14th of Nisan overrides with Shabbos, we have two reasons, two motivations to start the process earlier. And one is because we're not pressured by Nedarim Nedavos, it's Shabbos. And since we're pressured by the volume of Karban Pesach, doesn't it make sense to start as early as possible? And number two, we have a more serious problem. And that is Tzlias HaKarban. We said that Karban Pesach requires not only Akrava, as any other Karban, but there's a separate mitzvah of roasting the Karban Pesach. Now keep in mind that it's Shabbos. And the Tzlias HaKarban Pesach is not Docha Shabbos. It doesn't override the Shabbos. So that's another factor. We'll see how it plays into this sugya. But first, let's go through the Mishnah and the machlokas between Abai and Rav. That's what I want to cover today. So again, our Mishnah is going to now address the case of Shechitas HaPesach. When is the Zman? When is the time for shechting the Karban Pesach? Now, the Torah says in Parshas Bo, and you don't have to open up a Chumash because I'm sure you're familiar with this pasuk. And the pasuk says, "V'shachatu oso kol kahal Yisrael bein harbayim." And the question is, when the Torah sets up a time for shechitas bein harbayim, and and the Gemara is going to assume that that pasuk is referring to the 14th of Nisan, then when exactly is that going to be Bein Arbayim? The phrase Bein Arbayim that appears here in the context of Korban Pesach appears elsewhere at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, where the Torah formulates the mitzvah of Korban Tamid. It says, Zeh ha'ishe, asher takriv l'Hashem, kvasim b'nei shanos mimim, shnaim layom Allah samid. Shnaim layom Allah samid is referring to the Korban Ola of Shachar, the Tamid shel Shachar, and the Tamid shel Bein Arbayim. And the Torah says, Ez ha'keves echad taseh b'boker, ez ha'keves ha'sheni taseh Bein Arbayim. So we have two times in the Torah, in two different contexts, in two different chumashim. One is at the beginning of Shmos, one is at the end of Amidbar, where the Torah employs that term, Bein Harbayim. And the Gemara is going to tell us that although the time period for both the Tomid, the second Tomid of the day, and the Korban Pesach is Bein Harbayim, nevertheless, one has to come before the other. And the Gemara is going to derive a conclusion from Psukim that it's Dafka, the Korban Tamid, that comes first, and the Korban Pesach comes last. And that's going to undermine the halacha of what's called Hashlama. We'll talk about that word later on, which means that the Korban Tamid has to be the last Korban of the day. So the Mishnah says, Tamid, Nishchat Bishmona Umechza. Now, we're dividing the day as if it were a perfect day into 12 hours. And 12 out of those 12 hours, what I meant to say is that we're taking a day of 24 hours and we're dividing it into day and night so that the day is made up of 12 hours. And the end of the sixth hour coincides with noon. So we have 6 hours before noon and 6 hours after noon until sunset. In the Beis HaMikdash, the day ends with sunset. And again, we're not talking now about Shol Zmanios and all that stuff. We're just talking about a perfect ideal day made up of 12 hours of daylight, half of which finish at the end of the sixth hour. And at the beginning of the seventh hour, the end of the sixth, we start the next 6 hours until we get to sunset. The Tamid is going to be shechted at Shmona Umechza, 8.5 hours after daybreak, after the Boker starts. Now, we have to ask two questions. Question number one is, why is the earliest time for the Korban Tamid of Bein Arbayim 8.5 hours? Is that based on some sort of technical consideration, like for example the fact that we want to bring an awful volume of Nedarim v'Nedavos, so we want to give more time, and those Nedarim v'Nedavos have to be brought on the Mizbeach before the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim, therefore we're going to postpone the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim to 8.5 hours? Or does the Torah itself set up the time of Bein Arbayim as 8.5 hours? Point number two, how long does it take for the Korban Tamid to be brought? The Korban Tamid requires Shechita, Zrikas Hadam, Hafshatas Ha'or, all these different parts. There's also something with regard to a Korban Tamid which is called Nituach, where they have to, is there a verb segment? Anyway, to sever the parts of the carbon into different segments. And all this, together with what's called the Evarim, that have to be brought to the Kevesh, and from the Kevesh to the Mizbeach, and there they have to be burnt on the Mizbeach, this entire process of the carbon Ola, which is called the Tamid, takes 1 full hour. And therefore, the Mishnah continues by saying, V'karev b'tisho mechta. Now, let's not misunderstand the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not saying that the hakrova of the Korban Tamid is tisho mechta. The hakrova of the Korban Tamid is 8.5 hours. But tisho mechta means the gmar hakrova satomid. We add an extra hour until we complete the process of bringing the Karban Tamid. And that is what's relevant to the Karban Tamid. So we're up to Teisha Umechtza. Now, you and I would have guessed that if the entire process of Hakrovas Hatam, which begins at 8.5, ends at 9.5, then the Zman Shechitas HaPesach would be at 9.5. That's what we would have assumed. Unless, since on Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, we have an overwhelming volume of Karbonos of Pesach, therefore, we have to expand the time period of Bein Arbaim to give us more time to fit in the Avoda, the Akrava, of all those massive amounts of Karbanos Pesach. And what that's going to mean is that the Karban Tamid should be brought earlier, because as we said, we're going to learn from a pasuk that the Karban Pesach is brought after the Karban Tamid. But if you're going to only allow the Karban Tamid to begin at 9.5 hours, you know, you're already almost halfway till evening. That's not a good thing. So something is going to have to give over here. We said that there may be a pressure to push the Karban Tamid later because of the massive volume of Nedarim u'Nedavos, but on the other hand, we now on Erev Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, we're in a kind of a confrontation, a tug of war, because we have a logical, compelling reason to say that the Karban Pesach should be brought earlier because of the massive amounts of Karban Pesach. So the Mishnah establishes that be Arve Pesachim on the 14th of Nisan, when the Karban Pesach has to be shechted, and that's going to be after the Akrava of the Tamid, is Nishchat, the Tamid should be shechted b'sheva u'mechtza. We're going to make it 1 hour earlier. And therefore, v'karev b'shmonu u'mechtza, if we start at 7.5 hours, we finish an hour late at 8.5. So instead of starting the process of Shechitas HaKarban of Pesach at 9.5, the way we intuited it, it's going to be started at 8.5. We get an extra hour for the Kohanim, and there's reason. You know, there's a lot of Kohanim working here overtime, and we'll be able to fit in all the Karbanos Pesach before nightfall. And then the Mishnah says, and this is what's going to occupy the Gemara, Bein Bechol Ubein B'Shabbos. Now again, we were talking about the 14th of Nisan. We didn't mention what day of the week it was. So before we saw this extra addition to the Mishnah, we would have said the following, that if the 14th of Nisan falls on Shabbos, so in that case, 1 second, what would be the Havamina here? If Erev Pesach is Shabbos, since Erev Pesach is Shabbos, therefore we should have a Havamina at what? I'm trying to just give you a minute to work out this Havamina. So let me make this comment, and this is going to be really the subject of our discussion tomorrow. Right now, before we get to the Sugyas HaGemara, in the Mishnah itself, we really don't understand what's the chiddush here, bein b'chol, bein b'shabbos. Meaning, if the 14th of Nisan coincides with Shabbos, why should that in any way impact on the Zman of the Shechitas HaPesach. However, there is one case in which we understand why the, you know, the day of the week that Shabbos falls on should have an impact on the Zman of the Shechita. That's the next part of the Mishnah. And that is Chal Erev Pesach Lios be Erev Shabbos. Now we're talking about a case not where the 14th of Nisan is Shabbos, but the 14th of Nisan is a Friday. Now, why should that make any difference? Until now we said that any day of the week we're going to bring and Shech to Tomid at 8:30, and it'll take us an hour to finish it up. What happens if the day of the week is Erev Shabbos, it's a Friday, and the calendar date is Shabbos? I'm sorry, and the calendar date is the 14th of Nisan. Oh, says the Mishnah, Nishchat b'sheish u'mechtza. And I'm going to interpret it thusly. At this point, we're going to begin the Shechita of the Tumid at the earliest possible time, which is Sheish u'mechtza, so that we can begin the Korban Pesach at the earliest possible time, which is B'sheva u'mechtza. Now, U'pesach li'achrov, meaning immediately at Sheva u'mechtza, after we finish with the Korban Tumid, we're going to Shech the Korban Pesach. Why? What is pressing now? Because Friday is Erev Pesach. And the answer is Tzlias HaPesach. We're in a bind over here. Because on the one hand, the only way of fulfilling the mitzvah of Korban Pesach is by roasting it and eating it. On the other hand, Tzlias HaPesach does not override the Shabbos. If we're going to delay the Korbanos of Pesach, of the Psachim, then we won't have enough time to accomplish the Tzlias HaPesach until nightfall, and then the entire enterprise is lost. So we have a vested interest, an agenda here, when the 14th Erev Pesach is on a Friday, to finish the Korban Pesach as early as possible, so that after we finish the Korban Pesach, we can continue to the next stage, which is Tzlias HaPesach, and roast the Pesach before the beginning of Shabbos. So that's the Mishnah. So let's summarize, and then that's where we'll have to end for today. Let's summarize the three parts of this Mishnah. Part number one is that if we're talking any calendar day of the year other than the 14th of Nisan, then the Korban Tumid is brought at 8.5 hours, and that will take it a full hour till 9.5 hours, till the Hakrova is complete with all its many different parts. Part number two of the Mishnah is what happens on the 14th of Nisan, on any day of the week. If the 14th of Nisan is on any day of the week, then the Mishnah says that the Tumid will be shechted earlier by 1 hour in order to facilitate more time on the 14th for the Shechitas HaPesachim. So instead of completing the process of the Korban Tumid at 9.5 hours, we're going to have to complete it at 8.5 hours, which means we're going to have to start the Shechita an hour early at 7.5. That's when Erev Pesach falls on any day of the week, including Shabbos. But now we get to part three of the Mishnah. That's when Erev Pesach falls on a Friday. And because Erev Pesach falls on a Friday, here we're going to maximize the earliest time for the Shechita HaTamid. And the earliest time is Sheish u'mechtza. And why do we have to expand the time for Korban Pesach by making the Tumid earlier? And the answer is because of Tzlia. It's now Erev Shabbos. And we've got to make sure that we get all the Tzlias HaPesach under the gun before the onset of Shabbos. And therefore, we're going to have to maximize the amount of time for Shechitas HaPesach, and the total maximum by making the Korban Tumid the earliest it possibly could be would be Sheish v'mechtza. And if we have Sheish v'mechtza, we add 1 hour for Hakrova, we can already begin the process of the Korbanos Pesach at 7:30. In the case where Erev Pesach the 14th falls on any other day of the week, including Shabbos, the Mishnah establishes that we're going to start with the Korban Pesach at 8:30, which means we're going to make the Korban Tamid 1 hour earlier, and that means at 7:30, completing the process of Hakrova at 8:30, and then at 8:30, we begin with the Korbanos Psachim, and that would include even Shabbos. The exception to the rule is on Friday. On Friday, we have to worry about getting in not only all the Shchitas HaPesach with all the massive volume, which means we have to add another hour. We got to add 2 hours because we have to leave time for the Tzlias. Just want to mention a note here about why the Mishnah uses the phrase Arvei Pesachim in the plural and not Erev Pesach in the singular. And it wants to teach us that even Pesach Sheni, which is brought on the 14th of Iyar, for someone who was Tameh or Brachuk Bederech, and he couldn't bring the Korban Pesach Rishon on the 14th of Nisan, nevertheless, we're still going to shecht the Korban Tamid earlier in order to facilitate Pesach Sheni. And we're not going to say that only in Pesach Rishon we have to be Makdim, the Shechita of the Tamid, in order to facilitate all the many Korbanos, and the fact that we have to be Makdim to the Emurei HaPesach Mibodjom, and as we said before, the vast volume of Psachim that are being brought. You might think that in the case of Pesach Sheni, we don't have to be Makdim the Zman of the Shechitas HaTamid. And Kamash Malan, the Mishnah is telling me that Enochinami, we don't have to, we won't differentiate between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. In truth, Tosus in Masechta Yuma, in Yom Adav Chav Tes, vacillates back and forth if Pesach Sheni has the same din that it has to be brought and the Akrov has to take place after the Tamid Shalbein or Bayim. Maybe they could be Makrov it before the Tamid Shalbein Bayim. The whole reason we delay the Korban Pesach until after the Tamid is because it says Ba'erev and it also says Bein or Bayim. And in the Tamid, it only says Bein or Bayim, it doesn't say Ba'erev. And we're going to learn about this later on. In Pesach Sheni, it doesn't say Bo'erev, it only says Bein Arbayim. However, Tosus in Menachos on Daf Mem Tes comes to the conclusion that Bepshitus, the Pesach Sheni, is also brought after the Korban Tamid Shalbein Arbayim. And in that sense, there's no difference between Pesach Sheni and Pesach Rishon, even though it doesn't say the word Bo'erev. It says Bein Arbayim, and will equate the laws of Shechitas HaPesach for both Pesach Rishon and for Pesach Sheni. Now, the Gemara is going, we're going to get to this on Nun Ches Amid Beis, Amir Hashem. The Gemara is going to say that the words Bein Bechol, Bein B'Shabbos, in that middle section of our Mishnah, goes back onto Arvei Pesachim. And the Gemara is going to quote a brisa, which is the subject of machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, as far as the Zman Shechitas HaTamid is on Shabbos. And the Gemara is going to offer no less than three different explanations of that machlokes. And according to the first two explanations, the machlokes is going to be about Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos. There's one interpretation, that of Rabba Bar Ula, who says the Machlokes is with regard to other Shabbos of the Shana, has nothing to do with Shabbos of Erev Pesach. And the Gemara is going to explain that according to that, when it says in our Mishnah, Bein Bechol, Bein B'Shabbos, it's according to everybody. It's not totally in a Machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. So we see clearly that the Mishnah and these words of Bein Bechol, Bein B'Shabbos are referring to Erev Shabbos, Shechal Erev Pesach, Shechal B'Shabbos. Okay, Rabbosai, this is where we're going to complete our learning for today.